You're listening to Your Financial Choices on WDIY Allentown. Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics, and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC. To ensure compliance with requirements imposed by the IRS, we inform you that any U.S. federal tax advice contained in this communication is not intended to or to be used for the purpose of avoiding penalties under the Internal Revenue Code or promoting, marketing, or recommending to another party any transaction or matter addressed herein. This show is for educational purposes only. For advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA and a CFP, a Certified Financial Planner, on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen each and every week at wdiy.org. That's wdiy.org. Welcome to the show, folks. Today is October 3rd, 2012. The markets were up today, the Dow closing at 13,494, the NASDAQ at 31,35, and the S&P closed at 1450. Tonight we have the debates. You got to make sure you tune into those later this evening. And I want to remind everyone, if you didn't know already, that the voter ID law was suspended in Pennsylvania. So if you were thinking that that was going to apply to you, it no longer does. So just get out there and do the voting that you need to come November. Last week, we compared tax rates for 2012 as compared to what we might expect in 2013 under a number of scenarios. So that was kind of fun. Tonight, I hope to have more fun. We will be joined in the studio by Mike Apolity, a certified financial planner, and he's going to discuss retirement income planning strategies and answer the question, will we outlive our retirement income? We are live. We will take your calls. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Andrea is in the studio with us tonight, and we'll answer your calls, take your information, and ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay, and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics, not specific investments, and while we do typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and we'll do our best to answer them. Again, the number to call in is 610-758-8810. Our topic, retirement income planning strategies. I would like to welcome my guest who has been here before and has actually hosted in my place in the past. And we welcome back Mike Apolity.
Thank you, Lori. It's glad to be back and glad to chat with you tonight.
Thank you for being here. Mike's my savior this evening because I've been very stressed out. And so Mike came and rescued us. So, Mike, tell us a little bit about yourself before we start.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to bore the audience too much here, but as you said before, I'm also a certified financial planner, investment advisor, and work at Valley National for the past 10 years. And just looking forward to entertaining evening tonight with you and your listeners.
And Mike takes his mission very passionately, taking care of people. And the most common and most critical retirement income question, Mike, as we were talking, was people always wonder, am I going to outlive my retirement income? And they ask that in various different ways, not always just like that, but am I going to make it? Am I able to retire? Can I retire? So tonight, you're going to have some advice, tactics, and strategies for those who are still working, and also talk about hopefully those people who are already retired to see if they're on the right track to make sure their money's going to last, right?
Yeah, and I thought I would start in a more informal mode. And I was reading Sunday's paper, and there was a feature article on a book I read earlier this year. And the subject of the book was The Power of Habit. And if we think about financial planning, habit routines are really a key part of good financial planning for individuals, as well as just generally for your life. And one of the things that was really highlighted in the book was that adopting good habits really helps us to achieve our goals, our life goals. And our life goals include our retirement goals. And if we just think a little bit, you know, each of us has a daily ritual, a daily routine. Probably starts in the morning.
Hitting the alarm clock off, oh, yeah. off.
Brushing our teeth, taking a shower. For men, shaving. And for those of us who drink coffee, it's, you know, do you make the coffee at home, catch it on the way to work, or grab a cup when you get there? And these things start as routines, but eventually build into habits. And I'm not going to label whether these are good habits or bad habits. We'll let the listeners decide. But again, they really improve the efficiency of our life. And I thought this would be a really good segue into financial planning and retirement planning.
So habits are good, and we're going to talk more about those. But right now we do have a caller on line one. We have Alan. Alan, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi,
Lori, I'm here.
How are you?
Fine.
Good. How can we help you?
I have a little bit of money, somewhere around $2,200 in the state teacher's retirement system.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I earned that 10 years, 12 years ago. I'm never going to work for the state again, so I will not be vested.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to get a refund of that money, but I need to know what I should do with it. I don't have an IRA, so I'm assuming I need to put that into some sort of IRA so I can avoid tax withholding on that right now?
That's correct. You said it's not vested.
Right. I needed to work 5 years. I only worked a little over a year.
So these are your contributions?
My contributions, and the state did contribute too.
Well, you can only take out your portion.
Right. Well, I can take out the whole amount, whatever.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Get a refund. So I've requested the refund papers, but once I get that, I need to know what to do with it. And then once I have an IRA, since I don't have one yet, what plan should I have? How should I try to increase that money to add to it monthly, yearly, whatever?
Well, Alan, can I ask first, if it's only $2,200... And
right.
You don't currently have an IRA, and don't give away any of your personal information over the air here, but I'm just going to give you a scenario, and Mike can agree or chime in, and he's probably thinking the same thing. I'm going to say, are you retired now or not, Alan?
No, I'm working in the Catholic school system.
Okay, you're working.
Right.
All right, because one of the items sometimes people can think about is if it's that amount of money, and if you're over age 59 and a half, you could always just take it out and pay the tax on it.
Right. Now, wouldn't the tax be something like 10% or so?
There's a 10% penalty on an early withdrawal. If it's not an early withdrawal, if you're over age 59 and a half, then you may have the option of just taking it out as a distribution and paying income tax, your regular ordinary income tax rates on that $2,200. But let's say we don't want to do that. Let's pretend you're in a 25% tax bracket. Then you're right. One of the options you might want to think about is rolling it over to an IRA in order to avoid those income taxes. So then, Mike, do you want to talk about the options of rolling over and why we do that?
Yeah. Again, you've got a lot of options for rolling it over. And if this was a very large amount of money, you would probably want to do it custodian to custodian. But a small amount of money, you could put it in a check, and you've got a 60-day window to put it into an IRA. And
okay,
that could
that,
be...
I talked to my credit union about that yesterday, and he mentioned this. He didn't say the custodian thing, but the 60. I'd rather have a check in my hand and then decide what to do with it.
Yeah,
you just have to be careful, Alan, that you do it within the 60 days if you don't want it taxed.
Right. Well, then I don't think that'd be a problem for me. My concern is I'm a geezer, and I've got pension. I'll have Social Security whenever. I'll have a pension from the Catholic school system. I got this little amount of money, but I need some savings down the road. And this $2,200 is a little bit to add to the little bit extra I have. So I want to somehow save this and make sure it's able to grow.
Well, Alan, yeah, what you want to do, though, is explore your options. With that small amount of money, you may be more limited because there might be brokerage houses or financial advisors who, that would be too small. Then there's banks that you could go to, but then the returns on, you know, CDs, you can have a CD in an IRA. Those rates of return might not be as much as you want. You could always ask your current employer if there's any kind of retirement plan there, if they accept rollovers from existing retirement plans. Sometimes you can take your retirement rollover and roll it over into an existing plan. So you're just going to have to kind of explore that, and we can't give specific investments. But I think you're on the right track. You're going to consider doing a rollover. You know you can take it in a check, have 60 days to put it into a rollover IRA. Okay?
Good luck to you.
All right.
That sounds good, Lauren. Thank
Thanks,
you.
Alan. Have a good night. Thank you for calling. Folks, we got to take a break. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Hi, this is Rebecca Walls with a pledge buyback update. We're getting very close, just over $2,000 to go. And once we reach our mini goal, we'll all be able to enjoy a pledge-free weekend. Please help us get there by donating today. You can do so by logging onto our website and hitting the donate button in the upper right corner. It's fast, easy, and safe. And best of all, it's going to give us all more uninterrupted programming and fewer pledge breaks. Please donate now, and thanks for supporting Lehigh Valley Community Public Radio, WDIY.
Welcome back to the show, folks. The phone number this evening to call is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. I'm joined in the studio this evening with Mike Apolliti. We are talking about retirement income planning strategies and answering the question, will we outlive our retirement income? We just had a call from Alan. He had a small amount of money, but it's still a small amount of money that he wants to stay save and protect, and we talked about doing rollovers. Mike was talking about having habits prior to taking the call and how important habits can be when we're talking about just our daily life, but also our financial planning. So, Mike, tell us how important it is to establish some good habits and how they're going to relate to helping us in our retirement planning strategies.
Well, real quickly, we were talking about, you know, habits, our daily routines in the morning, and how routine, you know, becomes a habit, and good habits and bad habits. And the thing that reinforces the habit is the reward we get at the end. And for something as our cup of coffee in the morning, it might be the caffeine that we get. For the brushing our teeth in the morning, it might be, you know, fewer visits to the dentist. And, you know, with our retirement income planning, we're really trying to develop some good habits so that ultimately, like our caller that called in, when it comes time for retirement, is that we have, you know, we've achieved our retirement goals, and we have between our pensions and Social Security and other retirement assets, we can maintain the same lifestyle in retirement.
So what are some good habits to help folks achieve their retirement goals?
Well, let's start with those who are still working. And I would say that the best habit is creating a systematic, you know, savings plan, a systematic withdrawal from your paycheck and, you know, depositing it into whether it's your 401k at work, 403b at work, you know, some type of retirement vehicle.
You could do it into an IRA.
Or an IRA, yes.
Monthly distribution
into
an IRA.
Right. So even if your company doesn't have a retirement plan, you can set up an IRA and put money in. And it's good to probably do it on a whenever your paycheck is, to build in the discipline, because if you put it off for once a year, you know, 12 months come by and it's like, you know, you got other priorities, or you just kind of forget about it. There's an adage that I heard. I'm not sure how true it is, but it seems to have worked in my life. If you do something for 21 days, it becomes a habit. But if you stop for 21 days, it's gone.
Well, I'll tell you just real quick my little story, and I've shared this on the radio before, about I was never someone who was very good about making my bed. I never understood the sense of it because, you know, you just get back into your bed at night and it's a mess. But I bought a new bedspread, and I love my bedspread. And so I started making my bed about a year ago. And you know that I've made my bed every day since, because the reward is that it looks so beautiful. So I imagine when you're talking about retirement planning strategies and saving and systematic savings, the reward is how beautiful your account looks when you see it,
you see it growing
and getting up there. So for those that are retired or close to retirement, so, you know, you were talking about systematic savings, and I imagine those are the people who are accumulating. Then what happens is people start getting closer to retirement, and maybe they start getting a little nervous and wondering, you know, what they should be doing. For those that are close to retirement, what are some good things that they can do to make sure that their retirement assets are going to live as long as they do?
Well, again, I think it's important to have a formal, you know, retirement income plan. And just as we talked about for those working, having a systematic investment plan, when you get into retirement is how, you know, we have a couple of cases. Those who are maybe fortunate enough that between Social Security and a pension plan, they may have sufficient income coming in each month to cover the living expenses. Although now that pensions are a thing of the past,
right,
Social Security is typically certainly not enough to meet, you know, the average person's living expenses. So they need to have some other retirement assets. And assuming that there are other assets is so the you don't spend it all too fast is really setting up a systematic withdrawal each and every month. But the key issue is, what is the right amount? Because you don't want to be, you know, again, taking it out too fast and then outliving your assets. And then the flip side is, you don't want to be taking it out too slow and, let's say, sacrificing your quality of life.
The phone number this evening, folks, is 610-758-8810. And we're talking about retirement income planning strategies. So, Mike, when you're talking about this taking money out, making sure it's going to last, and how do you know if you're going to take out too much or too little, how does someone come up with, you know, a number? Like you said, try to set it up maybe so that it's kind of like the same every month.
What
do you have to factor in to know that?
I would say here, this is where it gets to be a little bit, you know, more complex. You need to determine a safe withdrawal rate. And there's three key factors: your life expectancy, you know, what future inflation is going to be, and what return are you going to have on your investments? And let's just say, you know, starting with life expectancy, mm-hmm. I think people might be surprised today is what, you know, the average life expectancy has grown to. If you are in good health today, and age 65, you know, virtually half of the people, or on average, half of the people are going to live to 83. And so that's saying 50% will die sooner, but 50% are going to live longer than that.
Mm-hmm.
So 25% are going to live to 90, and another 10% are going to live to 95. And if you're a female who have longer life expectancies than males, there's a 5% probability that they're going to live to, you know, to 100 or more. So for some people, that can be scary. For others, it might be exciting. Again, depending on whether you are prepared for retirement.
Well, I think when we talk about life expectancy, too, some of the questions that an advisor would have to ask would be, what is the life expectancy of family members? What is the health of the family members? For example, if someone comes in and says, oh yeah, mom died at age 55, but she died in a car accident, but grandma lived to be 100, that also helps kind of, because it could sound scary to someone when you're talking about trying to come up with a number and it's going to be based on life expectancy, inflation rate, and future investment returns. Someone might say, well, how do I know if I'm going to live to 100, or how do I know if I'm going to die at 60? as an advisor counseling someone, you kind of have to start putting a framework together that if you've got healthy clients who had healthy parents who lived to age 90 or 100, mm-hmm. you really need to plan for that long life expectancy.
Yeah. And I would say from my standpoint, I truly enjoy my role as a financial advisor, financial planner. And that's because I believe I can sleep at night because my clients can sleep at night. Mm-hmm. And to me, I like to plan conservatively. Mm-hmm. And I would say typically, again, if I have a situation where I just have someone in reasonably good health, I like to have a planning age of at least 95. But this is something we review each and every year.
Mm-hmm.
And again, even with a couple, you may have one individual who maybe doesn't have good genes, but the spouse does.
Mm-hmm.
So again, they're sharing the assets. So again, we're still planning for even from the second to die is a high probability that someone of the couple is going to be living to 95.
Right. And if we look at folks who are living on Social Security and the cost of living on that is typically maybe 2%. And we've seen years where there hasn't been an increase in living. But we also see expenses for medical cost going up, gasoline going up at a higher rate than that cost of living adjustment you have on your Social Security. So that's why it's very important to kind of know what to expect with life expectancy, how long it's going to last, and if the resources that you have are going to be there for you. We're going to take a quick break, but I want to announce that a Rich called off air and wanted us to say listeners from all over the world are tuning in tonight, including West Africa. So, Rich, if you are listening from West Africa, I don't know if you're a volunteer here at WDIY and you're traveling, but we welcome you. We thank you. And, folks, you can listen each and every week on WDIY.org. We're going to take a quick break. Mm. When we come back, we'll take more of your questions. 610-758-8810. Mike wanted to say something quick.
I have a client in West Africa, named
okay.
Rich.
Okay. Hi, Rich. Thank you for listening. We'll be back in just a sec.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back. Thank you for joining us. The phone number this evening, folks, 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. We're talking about retirement income planning strategies and how we answer the question, will we outlive our retirement income? I have in the studio with me this evening, Mike Apolity. Mike Apolity is a certified financial planner, very passionate about taking care of his clients and helping them plan for their retirement years. And Mike, we were just talking about pre-retirement, people should be developing good habits. And we talked about doing systematic savings, et cetera. And then as they get closer to retirement, we talked about how do we start thinking about how much money we're going to need in retirement. And we talked about how you would manage like a monthly distribution, kind of also trying to keep in these good habits and that people can follow in their retirement, some discipline, I would say, and how that it takes factoring to try to figure out how much people might need for their expenses. You have to know their cash flow, but we also need to know how long are they going to live. And you had mentioned that in trying to come up with a monthly withdrawal amount that will help their money last, you said it's not just their life expectancy, it's also inflation rates, and future investment returns. So let's talk about inflation and investment returns. How do you handle those assumptions?
Yeah, I guess I would say here, of the two, the inflation rate and future investment returns, to some extent over a 30-year horizon, and we can kind of look backwards and say average inflation has been, you know, averaged about 3% a year, sometimes more, sometimes less. But we have had periods, and I can think back to the Jimmy Carter years mm-hmm. where we had double-digit inflation, mm-hmm. Prices going up, in excess of 10-14% a year.
Mm-hmm.
The flip side now is when we look at investment returns and what people, living on fixed income have experienced is with, you know, as the Federal Reserve has pumped money into the system and driven rates down, people are now seeing that their savings account, checking account, CDs are earning next to nothing. Yet we still have, inflation. In fact, we've seen what's happened to gas prices, fuel prices. So, again, it's really put a squeeze on people. So, again, it gets to be difficult for the, certainly for the average individual to just kind of look at this and determine what number should I use. And, fortunately, at our end, I have access to computer software where we can actually simulate the next 30, years by looking back at history and just randomizing, historical events, different kinds of inflation rates, different kinds of investment returns, and, running, hundreds of cases, and then trying to determine, with a, typically I look for a 90% probability that even in the worst of times, we're going to have a withdrawal rate that is going to last. And again, recognizing this is something that is not done once and set in stone. It's something that we're reviewing year after year, because we can have periods where inflation is low and our assets are growing faster than our expenses, and conversely, we can have the reverse. So we may have to tweak it periodically, but for the most part, we can get on a reasonable path. But I think the key thing here is that if we sort of convert these retirement assets into a pension-like or pay-like monthly check, it helps build discipline in an individual's spending process. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the key thing, mm-hmm. is saying that I've got X dollars, to spend. And I think that in itself, is a major achievement. It's just like for the person who's putting money into the bucket while they're mm-hmm. working, is establishing a routine. Well, the same thing works almost in reverse when you're taking money out, is having some discipline, saying I have a fixed amount that I can live on. And, within that, you've got fixed expenses and discretionary expenses, and then you have to kind of budget to meet them all.
Because really, when you're talking about, when we were saying the average rate of inflation over 30 years, and we can talk about, average rates of return over 30 years, and what people don't, and I'm just trying to throw this in to put it in perspective for people, when we talk about averages, and that's kind of what Mike is saying, almost like an average withdrawal that you're taking each month, because folks, there's going to be times when your portfolio might do really, really well. And putting discipline into the retirement distribution strategy, like Mike is talking about, putting some discipline in that would keep you from taking from the pot just because it did really well for that year or for those couple years. So the temptation is, when you see your portfolio taking off, you might think, economics, I have more, I spend more. But what that doesn't factor in are for those years when maybe the returns aren't there, and now we're down, but you still have the same fixed expenses. So the discipline that you're talking about, Mike, I think is something that people really should take to heart, pay attention, see if it makes sense for them. Folks, the phone number here is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. We're talking about retirement income planning strategies. Mike was talking at the top of the show about having good habits and getting into good habits to make sure that we can make our money last in our retirement, et cetera. Jeff, are we at a time where we could take a break, or do we want to wait a minute? Okay. Folks, I think we're at a good breaking point, so I want to take our break. And when we come back, we're going to continue our discussion with Mike about what kind of withdrawal rates are we talking about when we're looking at retirement pots. And then I want to add a couple other nuances to some of the information that we're going over tonight. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And you are listening to WDIY, where definitely it's you, your source for local news and public affairs, NPR, and music diversity. Folks, the time now is 6:30. Now back to our program.
Welcome back to the show, folks. We are talking about retirement income planning strategies with Mike Apolity this evening. Mike's a certified financial planner. And the phone number to call in this evening with questions, 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. Mike was talking about now we're in retirement. We're talking about what kind of withdrawals people can take from their retirement accounts and setting it up such that they don't outlive their pot of money. We talked about the influences on that decision having to do with inflation, investment returns. We need to talk about investment returns a little bit more, and life expectancy. You know, one of the things I just kind of wanted to point out before Mike goes on is that when you're someone who maybe has, you know, $2 million and you spend $25,000 a year and you have Social Security and pension that covers that, these kinds of questions might not be as critical to you. At the same time, they could be very critical because what you can't always anticipate might be some of those future expenses you have, nursing care, and there might be some other types of planning that you need, you know, to coordinate with this. So while you might feel safe in your own personal situation, your own set of assets, your income stream, it probably doesn't hurt to still have someone look over everything and see how it all coordinates with your, you know, future expenses on the horizon. So, Mike, when we're talking about safe withdrawal rates, we talked about having planning for long life expectancies. We talked about inflation, the average rate of inflation, but that the average rate of inflation isn't necessarily applicable to medical expenses, which could be one of the biggest expenses for people in retirement, and gas and those types of things. So let's talk a little bit more about, I think you were going to say, oh, I know what else I wanted to say. For example, folks, if you're someone who has been very, very careful with your money because you lived during those periods of 14% inflation, and so you're afraid you're going to lose your money, and you're saving it somewhere that it's not getting any returns, you could actually have negative returns with the inflation. So you have to be very careful when you're looking at investment returns as well. Mike, what's the rule of thumb for safe withdrawal rates? Is there such
a
thing?
There is. And I think it's kind of good to throw one out, but I just want to kind of caution people up front. When we talk about rule of thumbs, it's kind of like this may fit an average person in an average situation, and that's kind of like life expectancy. On average, people who are age 65 today in good health will die when they're 83. Mm-hmm. Well, it's not going to apply to everybody. Some are going to be a little bit earlier than that. Some are going to be later. So, again, there is a rule of thumb, and it is 4%. A 4% is a safe withdrawal. But, again, it's contingent on many factors. It assumes that you're going to have an investment return that is higher than the inflation rate. So if you run into periods like you have right now where we have inflation at 3-4% a year, healthcare costs going up at 7% a year, and your return is 1% or less, it's not going to work. So again, you know, that's something I think to kind of maybe eyeball some things. But again, it's something that will vary from case to case.
Folks, the phone number this evening, 610-758-8810. Well, we talked about inflation. We talked about medical expenses going up sometimes 7%, Mike. So what happens when your living expenses exceed the sources of retirement income?
Well, here I would say it's no different for retirees than it is for people who are working. I think we can very easily in today's world, especially with credit cards, and mortgages get into a situation where we've lost some discipline and we're spending more than we make. Our expenses exceed our income. If we get to retirement and discover that situation, it's much harder to reverse it. But I think a starting point is really sitting down, and I have situations where I sit down with a clients, and define their expenses. What are your fixed expenses, your essential expenses, and what's discretionary? Although today, again, kind of reinforced by a recent article that I read about the cost of phones in homes, is years ago, you know, the normal phone in the house was the landline, and you had an extension in each room. Cost maybe $30 a month, and you had, you know, four or five phones. Everybody used it one at a time, and it worked. Today is maybe the landline's still there, but everybody's got a cell phone and maybe a smartphone that they can check their email, check the internet, store their photos, mail their photos. So today, the average household, the average, is $100 a month, in excess of $100 a month. That's saying for some out there, and I know certainly those with the smartphones are really kind of pushing it to the limit, we're talking a couple $100 a month.
As we all sit here with our smartphones.
So the question is that a luxury or a need? Is it, you know, a discretionary expense or an essential expense? So when you get to this point, you know, in life, you have to start really looking at things a little bit harder. Do you need all those bells and whistles?
Well, I guess, too, even do you need two cars if both of you are retired and not, you know, going to your job every day? Is that a discretionary or is that a luxury?
Yeah.
So those expenses that we've always thought were necessities may not be.
Yeah.
As we change into retirement. So we talk about looking at expenses. Folks, the phone, I keep saying folks, sorry, but that's, you know, listeners, the phone number this evening is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. So we talk about people maybe spending more than we make, but Mike, I want to paint a picture here though, because let's pretend I save while I'm working. I save and I save and I save and I save, and all that money I was earning, I was saving, I was putting into my retirement accounts. Now I've retired. And the question is, you know, what about when your living expenses exceed your sources of retirement income? I would expect at some point, if I don't have a pension, I'm going to be taking bigger amounts out of my retirement accounts.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, one of the things that's been helpful right now, and the window is still there, is since we have a lot of people going into retirement that still have mortgages, is the ability to refinance. And, you know, I think I've said at least four or five times in the past couple of years, mortgage rates had hit historic lows and will never go lower, and they've continued to go lower. And today they are probably the lowest since, you know, the period, you know, past our parents' grandparents, you know, mm-hmm. World War II.
Mm-hmm.
So this is an opportunity for people, if you haven't refinanced, is to refinance, you know, ASAP, because the chances are you could save a lot of money, and I would suggest rather than reducing your monthly payments is reduce the years.
Mm-hmm.
Pay it off sooner,
mm-hmm.
Especially if you're in retirement or approaching retirement, to get that liability behind you.
What kind of rates are we looking at now? Are we at like 3.5?
They've been going down so fast I've kind of lost touch. But mm-hmm. I would say for the 30-year period, we're talking low threes, very low threes, maybe 3.25. But for 15-year, 10-year, I've seen 10-year mortgages at 2.5% with a couple $100 to refinance.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things I see happening is, you know, people in their 40s, all of a sudden their children are going to college and they refinance their house then to try to lower their cost, have enough money to pay for their kids to go to school. But what happens when you're taking a 30-year mortgage at age 45 and we're looking at retirement at 65, that's where we still might have a 10-year mortgage. And if they don't revisit the rate, mm-hmm. what you're saying is even if they only had 10 years left, they could still refinance, maybe stay with 10 years if they wanted, but significantly lower their monthly payment if they wanted.
And I think the other thing, too, we get back to rules of thumb. There were some old rules of thumb that if you didn't have a 2% change in your mortgage rate, it wasn't worth doing it. But in recent years, in recent months, the closing costs as a result of just competition between the banks have significantly decreased so that, again, it can become, again, in some cases, especially when you get down to a 10-year mortgage, 15-year mortgage, I've seen people that basically had a payback, you know, a break even in like 9 months. So again, I would say it's certainly worthwhile for people to be exploring this if they still have a mortgage.
So that's all good and part of really good planning when you're thinking about retiring or you are going to be retiring soon or you are in retirement now when we're looking at trying to manage your living expenses and that cash flow that you're taking out of your investments each month, paying yourself to pay your bills. How can you reduce your bills? So Mike is suggesting you need to revisit what kind of bills you have. Are they discretionary? Are they necessities? And are we paying more than we need to for things such as phones, cars, and our mortgage?
And for those who are still working, I think in recent years they have been tempted when they went back to refinance to take out more money mm-hmm. and maybe even being suggested by the person at the bank. Where really objective is to reduce your liabilities, not maintain or increase your liabilities. You want to get that debt behind you.
And in fact, it probably makes sense to go look at refinancing while you are still working before you retire. Otherwise, there would be another whole set of circumstances or documents that the bank might require to show that you could make the payment if you don't have wages.
Which, again, getting back to the rates that are out there, the world has changed in the banking world is those rates apply for people who've got 20% in equity and good credit records.
Very good point. Very good point. So good credit records, that's important too. Mike, let's talk about Social Security because I'm not sure we can talk about retirement income planning without talking about Social Security. And I know that you were talking about this, I think, already for a couple years. We have to look at Social Security and what kind of benefits are available to people and making sure they understand what those benefits are because it can make a big difference in their retirement cash flow when they eventually do take Social Security. So let's talk about that for a minute.
Yeah, I'm going to start with a real quick history. When Social Security first came out, the starting age was 65. And then someone looked at it and said, gee, on average, women are 3 years younger than men. So they said, okay, you know, if the guy's retiring at 65, we want to make it his, you know, enable the wife to retire at the same time. So they created a lower retirement age of 62. And lo and behold, what happened over time is instead of retiring at 65, people start retiring at age 62. Well, when we had...
I didn't know that, Mike.
Yeah. When we had big pensions, it worked. But then the pensions disappeared. And this habit, let's say, gee, Mike, my dad retired when he was 62, so I can too. Or maybe I won't even retire when I'm 58.
Yeah.
well, in reality, I think what people don't appreciate is the implications of retiring or starting Social Security benefits at 62 versus your full retirement age, which for most people today is 66 or 70. And when we talk about full retirement age, it varies depending on when your birth year is. For those who are currently age 58 to about 66, 67, your full retirement age is 66. So let's just say, you know, that's when, you know, the government in their tables is assuming you're going to get your 100% of your benefits. If you retire at 62, it's 25% less. But if you wait till 70, it's 32% higher than your age 66. And let me just run through some dollar examples. Let's just assume for the moment your husband and wife, you know, both 62, and the Social Security amount is $15,000 a year. If you wait until age 66, it would increase by $5,000 to $20,000 a year. And if you wait till age 70, it would increase by an additional $6,400 to $26,400 a year. So we're talking $15,000 if you start at 62, $26,400 if you wait till 70. And again, it's adjusted proportionally by month for each month you start earlier or each month you delay. So, you know, it's not by year, it's actually by month. So this is something that people really need to think about before they just immediately go out, you know, as soon as they are entitled. And I would say that the worst danger is people who are still working and reach full retirement age and start collecting Social Security because it's there. And then they change their living style because, you know, I think for everybody, we can spend as much as we make.
It's economics.
And then all of a sudden they do retire, and all of a sudden they've had a cut in income because the paycheck's not there anymore.
Well, we're going to talk more about this Social Security when we come back. If you have questions this evening, we still have plenty of time. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk and traditional music is a crazy quilt of colors and textures. In the tradition traces its many patterns and designs. Music handed down from generation to generation. In the tradition, Wednesday evening at 7 on WDIY FM Lehigh Valley Community Public Radio.
And we are back with your financial choices, and we have a guest in the studio this evening. We have Mike Capaldi, a certified financial planner, and we're talking about retirement income planning strategies and some good habits to try to develop in helping you get prepared for retirement, and then for you to also implement during your retirement years such that you reach your goal of not outliving your assets. We want to make sure that you have enough money to pay the bills in your retirement. And as part of that, we also are talking about some Social Security options that people have. If you have questions, we still have time, 610-758-8810. Now, Mike was just mentioning Social Security. There's a number of different ages that people can collect Social Security. We have the early retirement age in Social Security, which is age 62. We have the normal full retirement age, which could vary for some people, but basically, let's say it's 66. It depends on what year you're born. So if your full retirement is age 66, your benefit is going to be different than if you collect early at 62. And there's even a different benefit if you wait until age 70, you get a premium. And then why we have these different ages, I want to just point out to people that you could actually collect at any time during any of those periods. You could collect at 63, you could collect at 65, you could collect at 68. But all of those different scenarios will be impacted if you collect early or if you collect late. You collect later, you get a little bit of a premium. You collect early, it's discounted a little bit. Basically, the Social Security makes some assumptions about your life expectancy. They say if this is your benefit and you're going to collect early, it means you're going to be collecting longer, so we're going to pay you less. If they say this is your benefit and you're going to wait longer, which means, and according to their life expectancy, you're not going to be collecting as long, they're going to pay you a little more. So what the concept would be here is, we go to what Mike said at the beginning of the show when we talk about whether people are going to make it through their retirement years. We talk about life expectancy. So I would almost argue if you know you're on death's bed and you're going to croak at 63.
Collect early.
Collect early. But if we know we have long life expectancies, it might be very important to wait a little longer. But more importantly, if you are married and you have a spouse, there are some other nuances that you have to be aware of, because one spouse might have a longer life expectancy than the other, but you also might have very different work records or earnings records that you're going to be able to claim your Social Security benefits on. So that's just hinting at something I hope that Mike will address when we're talking about when to choose Social Security, Mike, and how we get some of these options and how do we optimize Social Security.
Okay, well, let's kind of back up a second here. And, you know, we're going to retire next month. And so we kind of look at, you know, what money's coming in. Do we have a pension? No pension. What other assets do we have? Do we need to collect Social Security? So really early on, if you need money to live on, it may be mandatory that you start collecting Social Security earlier, assuming that you don't have the ability to continue working. And again, another big concern today, we were talking about healthcare costs going up 7% a year, is Medicare doesn't start until age 65. So for a couple today who has to pay healthcare costs out of pocket, we're talking like, you know, potentially $1,000 a month or more just for healthcare costs. So another reason for delaying till at least age 65, unless you have, you know, healthcare coverage, you know, really through your former employer that carries into retirement. So again, in some cases, you may need, you know, you don't really have much of a choice. But in cases where there is a choice, again, I think the key thing here, as you were, you know, alluding to in your conversation, is we may have a big gap between husband's earnings and spouse's earnings. And let's just assume for the moment that it was the husband who was making more. And let's just assume for the moment his benefits are twice his wife's. In a case like that, we're better off starting the wife early and delaying the husband for a variety of reasons. Again, the assumption here is they're both the same age. She's going to live 3 years longer than him on average. And if she's got good genes, maybe even longer than that. Ultimately, she will be entitled to 100% of his benefits.
When he dies.
When he dies. And each year he waits past his full retirement age, it's increasing 8% per year. So again, can make a big difference across their combined lifetimes. So again, the higher waged earner, whoever it is, be it the husband or the spouse, but it actually works better if it is the husband because of differences in life expectancies, is they're better off, you know, again, kind of as a rule of thumb, delaying that person.
If they have enough other means retirement. You kind of said that, but I just want to point that out too, that if they can make it, and maybe the wife doesn't even need to start collecting either.
Oh, right.
She could delay as well.
And for the wife, let's just assume for the moment that she delays to her full retirement age. She's got a couple of options. At her full retirement age, and we say 66, she could collect on her husband's, which she'd get half of his benefits.
If he's collecting.
As long as he's 66. He just can file and
file and suspend.
Yeah. Right. So is, you know, the same age. She turns 66. She collects half of his. Hers continues to grow by another 32%. So when she turns 70, she could flip back to hers. And then she's going to live longer than him. Ultimately, she can get his when he dies.
Right.
So she's got the ability to collect three different ways on half of her husband's, her own, and then ultimately all of her husband's.
And that's when she has waited till full retirement age. So listeners, I want you to understand, if you're thinking about collecting Social Security, eventually we'll collect Social Security, you have to be aware that all of those options Mike was just talking about, if you're, in our example was the spouse, if the spouse waits till full retirement age, then she has the option of collecting on her own record or her husband's record. So if she collects early, she no longer has the option of which record to collect on. Social Security will automatically have you collect on the higher record. So there are a number of different ways we have Social Security. It could be our earned Social Security, meaning we had our own earnings. It could be on your spouse's record, so that's spousal's earnings, and it could be survivor benefits. When I'm saying earnings, I mean survivor benefits, spousal benefits, and your own work benefits.
Another one is for the person who's divorced.
Right.
They have the ability, assuming they haven't married, and assuming that they were married for 10 years, they have the ability, you know, to collect on their spouse's benefits, former spouses, even if they're not collecting. So, again, that's something that people, you know, may lose sight of. So we could have a situation, again, where a female had very low earnings, became divorced, but her spouse had very high earnings, and then, you know, her ex-spouse, she can, when she reaches retirement age, whether it's 62, you know, 66, 70, or anything in between, has the ability to collect based on the former spouse's benefits, which again could be higher than their own entitlement.
And widows can begin collecting at age 60 if they don't have any dependent children, or earlier if they have dependent children in the home. But if there's no dependent children, they can begin collecting at age 60. But I do believe that is a reduced benefit if they start collecting at age 60 as a widow.
Right. So. I mean, everything is, unfortunately, actuarially reduced if you're starting early.
Okay. Mike, what kind of takeaways do we have for our listeners in the final few minutes here?
Well, I think there's a couple here. And kind of thinking back to where we started on habits, the best retirement planning habit would be to save a fixed portion of your pay each month. If you start when you're in your, you know, 30s and it becomes a habit, you're going to be all set when it comes to retirement.
Even better if you start in your 20s.
Yeah, right.
Someone told me to. I didn't listen to
them. The earlier you start, the better. And the easier, because it becomes, you just learn not to live on it.
Right.
And, you know, you start off small, you get a raise, and save half your raise. And eventually you get it up to a nice sustainable rate. And the reward there is you kind of can sit back and see it grow and know that, you know, when it comes time to retire, you're going to be able to, you know, maintain your lifestyle in retirement. The second one would be, we're talking about, you know, retirement distribution strategies. Just as we were talking about systematic investments when you're working, is the most successful strategy when you're retired is a systematic withdrawal plan, you know, a monthly, you know, set withdrawal that grows with inflation, that's periodically reviewed, and that's going to help keep you on track, help you to maintain some spending discipline. But again, you want to be looking at it on a regular basis to make sure you're not overspending and running out of money, or underspending and depriving your lifestyle. So just trying to find the right balance. And the third one is Social Security. And I think the key thing here is before you run out and sign up is think about it. Evaluate your options and look at the dollar implications, because they last for your lifetime.
And Mike, too, just also regarding the retirement income distribution strategies and understanding, you know, the periodic review, reevaluate your distributions. Also make sure you kind of go into this with eyes open that if you do have long life expectancy in your family, you should start bracing yourself for working longer yourself and making sure that you have the retirement assets that are going to pay. Don't have your head in the sand thinking, oh, you know, it'll all take care of itself. Because the other thing we have to remind people about, our parents, when we use our parents as a measure, as Mike mentioned, our parents had pensions. Well, my parents didn't have pensions, but most of our parents had pensions. And how they lived their life and their lifestyle could be very different than ours if we weren't good savers and saving up money in our retirement accounts and our bank accounts and things like that.
One of the things I forgot to mention, if there's still a minute or two here, is I recently came across a research study done on Social Security, and it talked about, and again, this applies to some group of people. Again, assuming that you've got assets that you can live on before you tap Social Security, is that by delaying Social Security from 62 to 70, that you could extend the life of your other assets by another 10 years. And that's really because of the huge change. You know, we've got the Social Security increasing between 66 and 70 at a rate of 8% a year. So if your other assets aren't growing at that rate, it may make some sense to delay Social Security. So again, Social Security is something that you don't want to treat casually. You want to do a lot of analysis before you decide when to start.
And sometimes people think that they're going to take Social Security to get them through until they have to start taking their required minimum distribution at age 70 and a half out of their retirement accounts. But folks, you can take your money out of your retirement accounts pre-age 70 and a half. So if you needed the extra money to live on and you think, oh, I'm going to get that from Social Security, as Mike said, if you delay Social Security, earn that premium on the Social Security, and instead maybe dribble and drab some money out of the retirement accounts, you could build that up as well.
Yeah, where it makes a lot of sense is if you've got the money sitting in a an account at the bank earning less than 1% a year.
Okay, Mike. Thanks so much for being here, Mike. A great show. I appreciate it. Mike, how do people reach you?
Valley National, 610-868-9000, extension 104.
Okay, Mike. Thanks so much for being on here. Next week, we will look at more of your financial choices. Jeff, thank you for being here. Andrea, thank you for being here. Listeners, thank you for calling in. Stay tuned for In the Tradition, folk music with Tom Druckenmiller. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.